timing and firing trailer.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Quantel, opt-in, opt-in, go tape.
This is Publius bringing you a step farther out. Your weekly radio message from the Man and Atom Society. And it is Saturday, the 2nd of September in the glorious future year of 2023. It remains to be seen whether this show will archive. My show yesterday, Friday, at 1500 UTC, did not archive, but that seems to be a specific problem. Something having to do with DJ Koyu's new show is causing the bot to thrash. Now, what else is there to say? Well, just a reminder, this coming Monday in the United States is Labor Day, not to be confused with International Labor Day, May 1st, which was originally the day on which the U.S. labor unions agreed that they were going to set the working week at 8, the working day at 8 hours, and the working week at 5 days. The 40-hour work week was basically something that was come up with by the unions, and in 1886 or so, they passed a resolution that from and after the 1st of May of that year, 40 hours, 5 8-hour days should constitute a legal week's work, and that they would behave accordingly and try to get the legislatures of the states to pass corresponding legislation. But they figured that by taking the first step of simply refusing to recognize demands to work for longer than that, they could speed the process along, as it were. What I tend to say is, on International Labor Day and also on U.S. Labor Day, this Labor Day, thank a union member for your freedoms. People are always saying, thank a veteran or something, and I'm saying, thank a union member. Because ultimately, if you look at legal history in the USA and elsewhere, and believe me, things were much worse in most other countries, that in most of the countries of Europe, an assembly of, you know, in many cases three or more, and sometimes eight or more persons, for any purpose, was considered to be an unlawful political act, an attempt to overthrow the state. Now, in the USA, even so, there was a great deal of law that was used to define labor unions as criminal conspiracies for the restraint of trade and all that kind of thing. And this wasn't just a thing in the 1820s, although if you look at the, you know, Boston Shoemakers cases and so on, you might be forgiven for thinking, oh, well, that was a legal artifact of the 1820s. It vanished by the time of the Civil War. Nothing of the sort. Nothing of the sort. Such a statute was still on the books in Alabama in the 1950s and was used in the prosecution of the labor union leaders who stood up for Rosa Parks. Because, of course, one of the key problems was trades were segregated, and it wasn't just a question of black people trying to get the right to eat at the same lunch counter as white people. It was also a case of black people trying to get the same labor protections as white people. people have pointed out. In particular, there's an excellent book about Negro migration to the northern states in the first half of the 20th century entitled The Warmth of Other Suns. Yeah. The Warmth of Other Suns by, Isabel Wilkerson. Isabel Wilkerson is the author. Anyway, The Warmth of Other Suns, the thing about Ms. Wilkerson, the author, possibly Dr. Wilkerson, Professor Wilkerson, anyway, is that she has a tendency to use the term caste instead of race, which is really more appropriate. I think that she's right about that, that what we call race in America is not a... it's a socially defined category, not a biologically defined one, which is what race implies. And it's socially defined in such a way as to restrict certain people to certain certain occupations, to living in certain neighborhoods, and so on. And that looks very much like a caste system. Yes, in Calm, they're telling the old joke about how you tell a plumber from a chemist and ask him to pronounce the word UNIONIZED. Things like your freedom to assemble and petition for redress of grievances, you know, they may be guaranteed in the Constitution, but for a long time those guarantees meant very little if you weren't fairly well-to-do. I have this book called We the Other People, that's the title, and it's a collection of manifestos modeled on the U.S. Declaration of Independence. It's a fairly narrow scope. In fact, in the introduction, the authors describe a bunch of documents that they didn't include because they felt they fell outside their scope. But one of them is the Declaration, basically it's the manifesto of the New York Peasants' Revolt. But you didn't know there was a peasants' revolt in New York State in the first half of the 19th century. But there was. There was a peasants' revolt against Cornelius Van Rensselaer. And so they have this. They issued this manifesto on July 4th of, I think it was 1826. I think that was right, 50 years after the Declaration of Independence, asking why exactly they should be continued to be bound by feudal dues and servitudes. Firstly, when the United States had been independent from Britain for a half a century, and secondly, when those feudal dues and servitudes had been imposed by the Dutch monarchy, which hadn't been in charge in New York for something like half a century before that. So, the farmers in upstate New York revolted against Cornelius Van Rensselaer. They demanded that he provide paper titles, right, showing that he owned the land they were on, and if he couldn't, that he forfeit it to them as the proper occupiers, and that if he could provide such paper documents showing that he was the correct proprietor, that he sell them the land at the customary 20 years purchase in installments so that they could get free of him. And that's something I think about a lot. You know, that we still live in a world where... pardon me. We still live in a world where landowners have an enormous influence. And I don't say that the people who produce food, for example, shouldn't have an enormous influence, but those people are the people who work the land, who may be very, very distinct, entirely separate from the people who own the land. In other words, who have a piece of paper which entitles them to collect money from the people who occupy the land and work it. You know, a lot of countries, after the Second World War, had land reforms. In particular, the Axis powers, the U.S. and other occupation forces, in many cases, in Japan, in Italy, in reparceled up the land and said, well, all prior, dues and tenancies and servitudes are abolished, and we're now going to divide the land up into plots based on a cadastral survey, plots of a certain, you know, sufficient to support a family, and then everybody in the villages, basically, who cared to, was entered into a drawing, and the plots were parceled out by lot, by drawing, to the people living in the area. People discussing DNS resolution in COM. I tend to use the SDF DNS servers, just because I can. But, you know, and that's one of the things that we're going to have to face in the coming years. Frankly, if we're looking at large climatic shifts, and especially if we're looking at shifts in coastlines and shifts in the fertility of the land, then we're going to look at changes which are going to affect landowners and land tenure and tenancy. Going to affect them a lot. And it's entirely possible that we have a lot of public policies in place which are designed to benefit the large landowners and are antithetical to the kind of resiliency which these times demand. That's a thought for you to consider. I'm not proposing any real definite solutions. I'm not even proposing really definitely what the problems are. I'm saying that we need to think about these things. And maybe we'll have some ideas. Maybe we'll have some better ideas. Maybe I'll have better ideas next week. Because this is kind of a weak show. But it is archiving. There's that. Anyhow. So after agonizing all week about whether to go to LostCon, I finally did sign up. I sent in the program participant form and so on, and they say they're happy to have me. And so I should have done it Thursday or Friday. I've been procrastinating because I'm insanely good at procrastination. It's really, the only people who are better than me at procrastination, unfortunately, are my family members. I didn't think it was possible, but it's true. Anyhow, now that I've sufficiently defamed my nearest and dearest for your entertainment. So I have to buy the train ticket, but I did check and make sure that such a train ticket was available. And it looks like what I'm going to do is leave Wednesday. That's Wednesday the 22nd, I think, of November, the day before American Thanksgiving. And I'll be traveling all Thursday, and I'll arrive Friday morning. And then the convention is Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And then Sunday night, I'll probably go from the convention hotel, which is out at LAX, to someplace more convenient. And stay until Wednesday, and then leave Wednesday night to return to Fort Worth. So I'll be in, my plan is to be in Los Angeles Friday, Saturday, Sunday at the convention, then Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, just kicking around the LA area. And so if you happen to be in the LA area, we could potentially meet up. Yes. And my hope is I may be able to meet with some of the folks from Diablo Canyon, Mothers for Nuclear. There are some good pro-nuclear energy people, surprisingly enough, out there in the LA, greater LA area. You know, within the range of the Pacific Surfliner, basically. You know, there are commuter and semi-commuter trains which run between San Luis Obispo and San Diego. And so anything in that range, I'm potentially available to meet up with, and I'm going to see if I can arrange some such meetings. And, you know, and if there's a possibility to arrange a visit to Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant itself, you know I'll be there. Yes. Anyhow, other things that I have done this week that are important that I should tell you about. Well, a big one is I have sent out a couple of letters, one to a commercial private mint in Mississauga, Ontario. Hi there, Snowdusk. And one to Ron Landis of Eureka Springs, Arkansas, who's at the opposite end of the spectrum. He's very much a boutique artisan minter, carves dies by hand. The man is an amazing artist. Amazing artist, artisan, technologist. Anyway, basically inquiring about tokens, 23.5 millimeters diameter, 5.5 grams mass, 75-25 Cooper nickel composition, and with a design on one side of the thing that I use for a logo, the hand grasping a radiating nucleus with the motto Atomic Power to the People, and haven't really got a clear idea of what a design I'd like to use for the other side, and so I just said, for the moment, we're going to assume it's going to be text, specifically from President Eisenhower's Atoms for Peace speech, "The miraculous inventiveness of mankind shall not be dedicated to his death, but consecrated to his life." Which I think is a great motto. It's a bit wordy to put on something 23.5 millimeters diameter, but I think it could be done without too much squanching. And then, if possible, also to have the edge marked with, you know, man and atom marked on the edge. And basically, I've requested estimates. How many pieces would I have to made in order to bring the cost per piece below 50 cents? 50 cents is my benchmark because 50 cents is basically what you can turn in Deutschmark coins in Germany for, which means that you can buy Deutschmark coins for 50 cents a piece in almost unlimited quantities in Germany. I don't want to be paying 50 cents a piece. Obviously, I prefer to pay 10 or 12 cents for these shilling coins that I'm buying from dealers' junk boxes, although it does mean going around to coin dealers and, you know, digging around in their junk boxes, and that takes time, it takes transport, which isn't free, and so on. Tobherd carves dice by hand and was impressed. Well, believe in me, carving dies by hand out of steel, it takes a steady nerve and a steady hand. He may also make dice. I know he's a hobo nickel carver, almost single-handedly resurrected the art of hobo nickel carving. I've been in his studio in Eureka Springs. I have seen a coin you would swear was a tetradram of Alexander the Great. And he flips it over, and it's a buffalo nickel. Incredible artistry. Just never seen anything like that. The guy takes hand tools and cuts away parts of a U.S. 5-cent nickel coin to make something completely different. You know, the old hobo nickels are mostly tooled, and they do something like a Jefferson nickel put a corncob pipe in his mouth or something, right? They were mostly fairly crude, or maybe turn Monticello into a streetcar. The old hobo nickels are fairly crude. This is sculpture in an amazingly small compass. We're talking 22 millimeters. Anyway, let me drop into Calm. Drop into Calm the link for the page for the Payphone project so that you can see how it's coming along. And for those of you who are not in Calm right now or who are listening to the archive, that is publius.ntfn, November Tango Foxtrot November.org. /denwa, D-E-N-W-A, which is a Japanese word for telephones, because that's where I put my phone stuff, slash taxophone.html, that's T-A-X-O-F-O-N, which was a word that I saw on a Soviet, on a photo I saw of a Soviet phone booth. Anyway, and so I'm trying to get some more of these Club Telephone 4 payphones from Germany. I don't want to pay too much for them, but it looks like they can be had at between 20 and 40 euros a piece. And so I'm trying to get some more of them. I've now got an MP114 ATA, which will handle four of them at a time. And so I can really set up a display with an automated information system. And I think, I don't know. I mean, we'll see what kind of results it gets, what kind of response it gets. So far, I had a friend. My friend Heather came down from Montreal, where she's been living the last couple of years, to deal with some things. And I went around with her a couple of days. And she came back to the house once, and I showed her the thing with the payphones. And she picked it up and played with it a little and said, "This is awesome!" So she's a little younger than I am. So I don't know, maybe older people might not find it that interesting. Maybe younger people who aren't used to payphones will find it more interesting. Anyway, I think they're really interesting. I've also thought about setting up something exposed to the public internet where, or public telephone network, where people could dial in, you know, maybe try and get SDF to allocate me a spare extension on the system so that people could dial in and listen to this from any phone they pleased and not have to wait until I brought it to an event. But first and foremost, you know, I'm doing this with the payphones as a thing to do at events. And that's why I'm interested in having these phone tokens made. I mean, you know, back in the past, in 2008, I had a group of Luna Project promotional medalettes made. And at the time, the idea was I wanted to sell them fairly quickly and use the money obtained from selling them to pay for another die. In other words, run art contests and have maybe a year, every year or even twice a year, new Luna Project medalettes issued. And that never happened. But with these, you know, with these phone token things, that would be their second purpose, is to put them into packaging and distribute them, sell them with a little information card or with various other things. I mean, obviously, people who wanted to just put 50 cents in the bucket, use them for a phone token, put 50 cents in the bucket, put one in their pocket and walk off, right? I wouldn't object to that. But if they wanted something with a little printed information card explaining what it was all about and, or maybe a more fancy kind of packaging, you know, that's something that I want to make available. Again, that's my idea of a promotional merchandise item. In other words, a thing that somebody pays me a little money for it, but also it's something they want to show off to their friends. That's the key. They want to show it off to their friends. And their friends will say, "Oh, well, that's interesting. What's it all about?" And then they talk about it, and that helps spread the message further. Anyway, so, you know, as I say, those of you who are listening to this who are financially supporting me, I thank you very much for that. Please, what I'd ask you to do is try and spread the word. Obviously, I'd very much like it if my paying fan base were to expand, but the main thing is outreach. You know, I'm going to send you stickers, I'm going to send you badges, and if you wear those badges and somebody stops you and asks you what it's about, if you have some time to talk. You know, I send you stickers, I'll send you more stickers, right? If you can hand them out to people. So I am, you know, that's what it's all about. And so the money part of it, right, the money support is to enable me to get more stickers, right, to enable me to go to more events. I'm really looking at potentially trying to spend as much of the rest of this year and early next year going to anything in driving distance, I guess, you know, so big chunk of Texas, Louisiana, Arkansas, Oklahoma, possibly even Kansas, as much as I hate to think about Kansas. MNW says, stickers from Man at Atom Society? I thought I had sent you some. But yeah, the other thing is that I just want to remind you that if you do sign up for my Patreon at the $3 a month level, I will send you some stickers, right? And other literature, and you know, the first time, and then I'll send, you know, I'm going to send things to you periodically later on. But I have, for that introductory mailing, the best envelopes. I've got these United States Postal Service envelopes with a hologram of a space station. Hologram of a space station. It's awesome. Anyway, and so if you do sign up for the Patreon, that's what you'll get. I got to take a photograph of a stack of these. I'm going to do that after this show. I'm going to take a photograph of a stack of them and post it around various places so people can see, hey, that's really nifty. I just wanted one of those. Although, honestly, the hologram doesn't show up very well in photographs. Let's see, what else is there to talk about? There's actually a lot to talk about. I'm just not well prepared to do it right now, I guess. Which is my own failing. I really am going to try and see before September really sets in, you know, while it's still pretty sunny most days, I really am going to try and make those cyanotypes to make cyanotype badges. I've been deferring on that just because you've got to dry the cyanotype paper in a darkened room, and we don't actually really have rooms in this house that don't have outside windows. So what I have to do is I have to black out the window in the bathroom, do it in the bathroom. And then I'll make some cyanotype badges, and all my $5 a month Patreon supporters and up are going to get, they will eventually get, the only one who has got them by now is in Canada, will eventually get a Pemmican souvenir badge with a 10-cent 1969 First Man on the Moon stamp and a cyanotype badge. And so my one supporter up in Canada is going to have to wait on the cyanotype badge because it's expensive to mail things to Canada. It used to be the same price to mail things to Canada as to mail things to the United States, but they've made it expensive now. But I can mail them more cheaply, crazily enough, from Germany. And so that's what I'm going to do. Basically, anything that has to be mailed outside the U.S., I wait until I'm in Germany and I mail it from there, or I give it to a friend who's going back to Germany who can mail it from there. But it's very sad that, you know, more than 100 years after the Universal Postal Union, we still have to deal with this thing. It's actually getting worse, not better. We should demand better. I see. Someone dug up the Wikipedia page for the Helderberg Anti-Rent War of 1839-45. How do we get the USA to adopt a nuclear fuel recycling program? Oh man, that's definitely something that I would do. Anyway, what else is there to say? Well, send your cards and letters to Post Office Box 1035, Fort Worth, Texas 76101, United States of America. I know I talk about how gratified I am whenever anybody sends me money, but the main thing that I truly want, the thing that I truly appreciate the most, is receiving your cards and letters, which I will probably read out over the air. And I will probably also send you something in return. And so, yeah, patreon.com/man_and_Adam.